right, then I will call this meeting of the Human Rights Commission on for June, Tuesday, June 5th at 5:38. Call is to order. Jason Wessel chairing for today. In attendance, should we go around and get everybody to give their names, please? Rebecca? Oh, everybody make sure that your microphones are turned on, too.
Kim Maines, District 6.
Rebecca Chavez Haupt, District 3.
Nicole Salazar, District 5.
Wissal Kuder, District 4.
Luna Benuri, at large.
Okay. First item on our agenda, do we have anybody else that needs to introduce themselves?
David Salazar. I'm with the city's Human Resources Department.
Thank you. And staff people.
Oh, and Moana Uluave-Hafoka, Mayor's Office.
Marilee Carter, Mayor's Office.
All right, thank you. So first item on our agenda is that we acknowledge any members of the public that are here that wish to say anything. I don't see anyone, so we can skip over that. That'll be the public comment phase. Did everybody get a chance to look over the minutes from our last meeting? Yep. Should be a hard copy in front of you if you need to look at it. At this point, we'd entertain a motion to accept the minutes.
I move adoption of the minutes from Tuesday, May 1st, 2018.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor of adopting the minutes?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, we've adopted the minutes. Looks like first up on our agenda then would be the HR gap analysis discussion, which is what David Salazar is here for. So unless there's anything else, I'll hand it off to you.
Oh, and before he starts, the reason why we brought David was a lot of the questions we had about what the current status was of Salt Lake City Corporation, and I just wanted to provide the information so we have a foundational knowledge, just like we were talking about. I think it was Nicole and Jason were the only two that had seen this presentation, as well as I think David has more information or updated.
All right. Well, then for a little bit more backstory to it, we had a member of the commission that was going to take point on I think, diversity recruitment and outreach issues. Martin, can't remember his last name now, but he has resigned. So we're kind of back to square one. So it might be good for us to get a refresher on these issues so that if somebody's passionate about it, they might be able to work with David and HR and figure out how we can best fit into the city's vision for diversity recruitment and stuff.
All right, well, let me just say it's a pleasure to be here with you today. I'm actually filling in for the Human Resources Director, Julio Garcia, who made this presentation, I believe it was last fall. I think a couple of you may have been in that meeting beforehand. So I'm going to just briefly go over the slides. It's a very short presentation, but I've also distributed to all of you a set of three additional handouts, kind of a follow-up update to the information that he provided in his last discussion. So let me just kind of, before I get to the handouts, talk to you a bit about some statistics that I think you might find interesting. You've seen this, been provided this particular presentation, as I understand it, before this meeting, and if I can figure out how to move the page down. Just a couple things I wanted to touch on. One is just a bit about the demographic data that we have for Salt Lake City employees. The data that we have is somewhat dated, but we're not talking about years. We're just talking about a matter of a few months. So probably a whole lot hasn't really changed about it. And the second thing I'd like to touch on is some of the current diversity recruitment efforts that we have underway, which I'm excited to share with you some of the more recent things that we've done, especially since this presentation was last made. This first slide just touches very briefly on just kind of an overall view of what Salt Lake City's employee makeup looks like when we look at race. And what we compare ourselves against, just so that you know, is not Salt Lake City, not the city's population, but we're looking, because we're talking about those who are eligible to work, meaning of age. We're not going to count, you know, all the little children and students in high school and so on if they're not eligible to work. So we focus our comparison on statistics that compare us to the Wasatch Front available workforce, so that you know that these are the numbers where this is coming from. So in this slide, you'll see the blue column indicates the Wasatch Front available workforce, and then you'll see the gold, what appears to be gold, that highlights the makeup of our workforce. And you'll see that we actually mirror pretty close overall to what the Wasatch Front available workforce is. When you look at ethnicity, that includes Asian, American, Alaskan, Indian, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander, Hispanic, Latino, African American, and Caucasian, non-Hispanics. And virtually every one of those categories, except for the Hispanic Latino, we either meet or exceed what those numbers show us. So we're just slightly behind in the Hispanic Latino. Now, this also incorporates all employees in all jobs. There's no distinctions that are made here in terms of what level or type of jobs. It just, everybody melded into one pot. I'm going to skip over this next slide. It just gives you a kind of a shot of the mayor's office. Well, I'll go ahead and call it out because I think it does point some things out that are different. When we do a breakdown by department, you can see in the case of the mayor's office, Asian, American, Alaskan Indian, and African American actually all exceed by quite a bit the available workforce. And other areas where they're slightly less would be in the Caucasian or the, looks like, Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander categories, along with Hispanic and Latino. So the point is, as we look at and we do a breakdown by department, even offices in the department, we can get down to some of the detail that helps us work with the departments and know what areas it is that they want to or need to focus on when it comes to looking at ethnicity. When we look at gender overall, Salt Lake City is predominantly male. We have about 77% of our overall employees who are male, compared to only 23% that are female. Again, the population as a whole, and when we look at the available workforce, it's not a whole lot different. It's about 50-50. One of the obvious areas and probably the biggest areas of concern for us really would be on trying to focus on efforts to attract more females to the workplace. If we do a gender breakdown by department, you can see we've highlighted here those departments that are dominated by male include the airport at 82%. Fire, which again may not come as a great surprise, is predominantly a male-dominated profession as a whole, so it's not something that's going to be unique to just Salt Lake City, but virtually every other city in the United States struggles with the same challenge, which is to try to attract more females to that profession. Police would be in a similar situation. Public services, that includes divisions like our streets division, parks, golf, and the facilities. Public utilities is our water department. Departments where we actually are female dominated include the attorney's office and our own HR department. And so, again, just some interesting statistics for us to look at. What we realize in looking at this is really there's not going to be a one-size-fits-all solution. That what we want to do is work with departments to tailor or custom an approach that's going to work for them. And part of what's new that I want to share with you among the handouts I gave you will highlight how we plan to do that.
I have a quick question on the previous slide. Would the IT and the communication department be under public service?
No, IMS is its own department. Okay. So they're just not shown. This is just a sample of city departments.
I have a question before I start. Is that even the residents to all, only American citizen in that?
This would be all employees, so
doesn't matter.
Anybody that we have, it's not those that are U.S. citizens versus those that are not. The only qualification to come to work for us is that you'd be eligible to work, and so we don't differentiate in any of the statistics that we look at on that basis. Any other questions? All right. So what sort of diversity recruitment efforts do we have underway or had we planned for at the time that this presentation was initially made? One of the handouts that I gave you is actually an update. It's probably more of a complete list. This slide highlighted the 2017 job fairs that we attend, but you have the 2018 list, and a lot of those are geared towards law enforcement. Police in particular has done and attends a lot of different recruitment events throughout the state. We in the HR department, we'll focus primarily on those job fairs or community events that are being held along the Wasatch Front, since that's where we compete primarily. That's where we like to go in order to help others know about what career or job opportunities we have. But you can see that there's actually quite a wide variety. Fairs that would target, for example, hiring of females, which is an area that we know that we need to focus on. But also refugees, Hispanics, Pacific Islanders, all kinds of different events, again, that might be centered on a particular group of workers. But again, nonetheless, a pretty wide variety. And so we really do try to get out to as many of those events. Cost sometimes is a limiting factor. So many of the events that we attend are free or fairly low cost. But we don't want, you know, money to be the reason that we don't get involved in attending a particular event. In terms of the candidates that we are able to attract, this slide doesn't necessarily reflect the success that FIRE has had, but it's an example of some of the tracking that we will do in order to know how well we're doing or what areas do we need to focus in on. This particular group of columns highlights from 2010, 2012, 14, and 16, the number of diverse candidates that we had who applied to be firefighters primarily. And you can see in the next to the year, it would indicate the percent of the overall group of candidates who were considered to be diverse. That would include women and ethnic minorities. Any questions about that? And just in case you're wondering, well, why is it only every 2 years? Is because we only recruit for firefighters once every 2 years. We have upwards of, this year was one of those years, and we had, I believe, 1,100 candidates who applied to be firefighters, who completed the initial application process. Nice. And I know those numbers have actually just gone up, and so I wasn't able to get this updated for you, but if that's something you'd like to see what the 2018 figures look like, it's something that the fire department is actually quite proud of, and they worked very, very hard with their diversity recruitment coordinator to boost those numbers and boost interest of women and ethnic minorities in the firefighter career. That's actually a good question. So you think 1,100 people who want to be firefighters, and they will probably only end up filling about 20. So it's very, very competitive. It has always been for Salt Lake City. So it's a large number of candidates, which is wonderful, but a small number of candidates. Police, on the other hand, I think struggles a bit more. They have more positions to fill. We don't get as many candidates as we once did. But I think, again, we're in the same boat with other jurisdictions where it's particularly hard right now to attract people or find people who want to come into law enforcement at this particular time, let alone just trying to find people who mirror the residents of Salt Lake City and try to enhance our diversity. But it's something we'll continue to keep working at.
Is that only U.S. citizens? or?
So firefighters are not required to be U.S. citizens to be hired.
Okay.
So there is no citizenship requirement for those individuals to apply. Yeah.
From a reason, my question, because I work with a refugee community that when I arrived here, they all have a green card, but they didn't become citizen.
There is a citizenship requirement for police officers. That's a statutory requirement, but that's not the case for firefighters. So please, by all means, we want to get them in that pool. And if things change at some point and the laws change and we're able to include those individuals, then I think we just open ourselves up to a huge number of people who I think would be a benefit to have. All right. One of the other things that Julio presented when he was last here was to talk a bit about what was, at the time was being contemplated and just talked about. So it was just in a draft. You now have before you in the handouts I gave you a final approved copy of the city's new gender pay equity policy. It's a very short policy, but in essence, what it states is that, you know, we are committed to ensuring gender pay equity for all of our employees, but in particular for women, because what we find nationally is that women's pay lags that of their male counterparts. And so we have integrated into this policy requirements such as we are no longer allow our hiring managers to ask candidates how much they earn in a previous job. And the reason for that is because oftentimes one's previous salary will drive or somewhat nail down what we're going to what an employer might offer them. And so we don't want that to be a limiting factor is why that's part of our policy. So that's one of the key components that you'll see there. Any further questions about that? Okay.
Do we know what the gender pay gap is for existing employees?
We do, actually. So where the pay gap nationally tends to be 80 cents for every dollar, and that's, understand, when you take all workers, all females, regardless of what type of job that they're in. So we did a similar analysis for Salt Lake City. And so, again, all females, regardless of job, all males, and the pay gap is, there's still a slight gap, but it's 93 cents instead of 80 cents. And for Utah as a whole, it's actually 70 cents is what most statistics show. So there's work to do, obviously, for us to focus. This policy will help ensure that we aren't creating, or contributing to that gap. But we're better off than most. So
the policy reads to prevent continuing to grow the problem, but is there any efforts to address the existing?
Yeah, so let me just speak to that. So again, what I'm talking about is when we take all female employees, all male employees, regardless of job, the gap is 93 cents. When we look at all workers in the same job title, so let's just say you take an engineer, okay? And we compare the pay of females and males in that particular job title, there's virtually no gap. You're either, in some cases, finding that the women earn more than their male counterparts, depending on the job. We have situations where the males still earn more. But what we find in looking at the detail for why or what the reasons are behind the pay differences, We feel confident that those are because of differences in experience. For example, you may have somebody who, if you have a female who is a brand new graduate at a school, let's say it's an engineer, you compare that to her counterparts who are male, who've been there for, 20, 30 years, you would expect that those individuals are going to be paid more just because of the experience. So it's reasons like that that we find that those paid differences exist. If there isn't a reason like that to substantiate a pay difference, then we've made those corrections. And so we're actually fairly confident that we've looked at every one of those instances where there was a pay gap to ensure that there's a justified reason why that is. And that's not something that's based on gender. Yes.
I have a question. I'm actually ignorant as to how salary is determined. Is there a negotiation process, or is it just based off of statutes?
It actually happens a couple of ways. So about two-thirds of Salt Lake City's workforce is actually covered under collective bargaining contracts. And so the pay rates for those employees are based entirely on experience. So how many years of experience do you have doing the job? And there's a pay table that says this number of years, this is your pay rate. The beauty of it is there is absolutely zero consideration for gender or anything else in that case. And so we find that, especially looking at our union employees, there is no difference in pay when it comes to gender. For our non-represented jobs, those would be the jobs where some negotiation can, in fact, occur and does. And so you figure the other third of our employees have that ability to negotiate what their pay would be. But we still have established pay ranges. So, you know, if the range says you can be paid X to Y, we're not going to go outside of that. It's got to be something in between.
Do you have any idea how the numbers look when you take the two-thirds versus the one-third on pay gaps?
Again, I think what we found in looking at the detail, if there was, in fact, a pay difference based on gender, then the differences were attributed to either the number of years or there might have been some other skill requirements or skills associated with that individual, certifications, things like that, that would arguably be used to say this is why there's a difference in pay.
Yeah, I was just asking because I'm kind of interested in seeing if negotiating, where there is the ability to negotiate, if we end up seeing more of a gap in the when it comes to gender. Just anecdotally, my sister works for corporate at eBay, and she has to hire people all the time, and she gets frustrated because she has MBAs from Harvard, and she says the women will not negotiate for a higher starting salary. She has to goad them to try to ask for more up front, and it's something I'm curious about, whether or not there's a dynamic there that is completely not the city's fault, but it's just part of the culture that we have that discourages people based on gender from asking for a higher salary up front.
I can tell you that probably the greatest limiting factor really is what we pay our current employees. So again, regardless of whether they're male or female, we don't want to create a situation. So I also happen to be the compensation administrator for the city. So this is something I'm very mindful of. We want to make sure we aren't creating situations where we're hiring somebody brand new who maybe has little or no experience and paying them more than somebody who has umpteen years of experience. So other things beyond gender tend to control or limit what we can do in terms of pay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so just a quick summary for you. You know, we try our best to measure and gauge where do we stand, because if we don't know that there's a problem, we certainly can't manage or fix it. So this at least provides us an opportunity by tracking things like gender pay equity. It's something we're committed to doing, and that's another thing that the policy requires us to do. So we do that on a regular basis, but also comparing our workforce to demographic to those of the available workforce. Again, it's something that we do ongoing to make sure that we are focused on the right areas. Now, one of the things that has evolved since this presentation was last made is the last and final handout I have for you to point out to you is actually the diversity recruitment strategy and plan that we have put together. And I'm excited about this because, again, this is an approach where we've identified specific strategies. And I'm going to just let you kind of read through those. But they're sorted by priority. And the priority really is kind of what are those areas that we feel like we need to be most focused on. So hiring women, more women, for example, is an A priority for us, because we know when we look at the statistics, we want to increase the representation of women in Salt Lake City's workforce. But you can see in that some more detail in terms of how we plan to approach and take and address those particular issues. So one of the other areas beyond females, we also want to focus on increase the number of refugees in our workforce. In fact, we have recently, the mayor's cabinet attended, they visited the LDS Church's Welfare Square, and they were introduced to a program which we are planning to tap into. And the name of that program, just so you know, is their Refugee Business Partnership, where they actually will train refugees and also provide schooling for them in English. So they spend half of the day working, getting work training. The other half of the day is spent in English class, and they complete this process, and then we partner with the church then to actually test. We would be able to have those individuals come work for us for a couple of weeks. The church would pay basically their salary for us to just try them out and see, is it a good fit? Does it work for them? Does it work for us? Before deciding whether we wanted to offer a permanent position to them. So that's something we're looking forward to, something that is immediately available to us, that really is little or no cost to us, and yet gives us an opportunity to give these individuals an opportunity to work.
I just have a question. So for refugees, always there's a culture shock is different, and people like when the system of work is different here and where they come from. Do you guys give you training for your staff, how we work with our refugees as well?
That's something that they actually do, as I understand it, with their training program, is to help acclimate them and train them and educate them about work culture in the United States. In particular here, what our process would be, as this is something we're just starting with them, but that's something that we would definitely want to engage with them on, to say, okay, now, understand this is our process, and these are the steps that you would need to take in order to apply for a job. And even going so far as to helping them develop resumes, we're willing and interested in doing all of that with them.
I have two questions. One is, that's fantastic. We're doing that from the refugee side of that perspective. What about the staff that's already in place? Are they receiving a diversity training to be able to work well with people coming in from various backgrounds, whether the refugee or not?
Right. I'll answer the second question first, since it's the freshest in my mind. I'll admit I am not, because we're just learning about this right now. So I'm not certain what the requirements are. But I can tell you that we would only be able to consider, and I'm assuming that they would too, individuals who are eligible to work in the United States. Now, in most cases, I'm assuming that they probably all have that as refugees or granted that ability. So long as they meet that eligibility, then there's probably less of a concern on our part, because they've taken care of the work training and even helping them learn English. And so they've done a lot of that work already, which is a huge benefit to us. So beyond that, I'm not familiar with what a lot of the requirements would be. And there are other programs like that, like this one that we're aware of. Catholic Community Services, for example, I think operates a similar program. So this is just one that has recently come to our attention, and so we've reached out and plan to engage with them and, matter-of-factly, any others who would be like that. To your first question about training, so one of the things that we have implemented, and I don't know if Julio was able to speak to this or not when he was here last, but as part of our employees' university, we have, I couldn't even tell you how many, it's probably 2,000 or more, different courses that we offer our employees, training supervisors and managers in our policies and protocols is among the training that we provide, for example, in our supervisor boot camp. So it's just one of, I think, 12 different courses that they're required to engage in order to complete that particular, not really a certification, but a course that we have set up for that. So we're looking, we have those things, and we're looking for any other opportunities that we can engage with employees to make sure that they're trained and know how to deal with employees coming into the workforce. Because we work hard to get them, and we don't want to lose them once they're here. Because getting them in the door is one challenge. Keeping them is a whole other matter. Any other questions?
I see the in the strategy and plan, there's a lot of the items here that are to address the pipeline. So, and through the statistics that you're sharing, what is the city doing to make sure that as we address the pipeline issue, those candidates are getting the right opportunities, like through the interview process, that sort of thing? What I've seen previously is making sure that you actually have a diverse interview pool so that you have more perspectives when you're making hiring decisions. Mm-hmm. Is there anything like that that the city's doing?
I don't know that there's something formal that I can point that I can point to. Again, other than just through training, talking about and making sure that hiring managers in particular know the importance of making sure that, you know, this is something, one, that we value, and two, doing whatever we can to make sure that we're not only seeking diverse candidates, but they're also seeing a diverse set of people on the other side of it. Sure. And it's a challenge, more so in some areas than others. Fire, for example, where, again, it's predominantly men, predominantly Caucasian, it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge. But that doesn't mean that we can't and shouldn't be including others, perhaps even from other fire jurisdictions. I know police in particular does that. So I guess that's one example I could point to where they involve not only representatives of the department, but they'll bring in outside entities. And I know personally, having met some of those individuals, they are both female, they're ethnic minorities, they're all types. But that's an area I'll make note of that we want to make sure that we're being more deliberate about and making sure that people are aware of that.
I had a question about how you're interfacing with the Department of Workforce Services and some of the efforts they have in terms of working with their case managers and their employment counselors and folks that are working with individuals that are seeking employment, so that Salt Lake City is on the radar, and the variety of options that you have for people to apply is kind of they're thinking about that. I don't know how that works in terms of how the city interfaces with DWS.
You know, so one of the, on the, if you look at the job fair list, you'll notice that there's a couple of the fairs that DWS actually sponsors specifically for refugees, and we've attended those. And as a result of those invitations that we received and attending those fairs, we've participated in other events. I myself went to an event, it's been within the past year, where they are wanting to encourage employers basically to provide these employment opportunities for refugees. And so partnering more closely with them is something that we have and are open to doing. And I don't have statistics to give you in terms of numbers of people we've actually had come to us through DWS's Refugee Services Program, but we are in contact with them and exchanging information and participating in those events on a regular basis.
I'd be interested going forward in understanding how effective they are for finding and you know, pulling people in and then ultimately hiring those individuals. Mm-hmm. The other area of focus that I'd be interested to hear about is persons with disabilities and how we're engaging in them, you know, trying to find accommodations, or also, you know, if there are opportunities depending on the individual's disability, bringing them into some of these positions.
And again, I mean, we try to do that through job fairs, and the state does sponsor those events, and we go to those on a regular basis. You know, that's one of the things that is probably a bit of a challenge for us in terms of tracking statistics, for example, because it's not it's not among the information. We don't identify employees, you know, are you disabled or not? So it makes it harder to report on things like that for sure. But nonetheless, it is an area that we're aware of, and we have even had talks with the administration wanting to look into and pursue. And I think I've talked to, it wasn't this group, but actually another advisory group to the mayor's office, the disability advisory group, to looking at the possibilities of doing something similar to what the state of Utah, for example, have done with their ASAP program. And that provides an alternative application process. And so we're still looking into that and still trying to decide whether that's something that we can legally, you know, statutorily pursue. But it's things like that we are thinking of and trying to find ways to be more proactive about doing that.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time and attention. I thought, well, you know, 10 minutes, I don't have much to say, but you're a great group and had some questions, and hopefully you found this beneficial. So any other subsequent questions you might think of, let Moana know, and we'll be happy to track anything down for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I guess the next item on our agenda is Human Rights Day plan. I think, as we're all aware, that that comes up rather quickly. The date is already, what's the date set for that moment?
So I just wanted to put it on everyone's calendar, too. This Saturday, December 8th at the Sorensen Unity Center. So that's what we have now. So that's good.
And the 6 months will go by very fast.
Yes.
So,
you don't know the location, right?
The Sorensen Unity Center.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So my suggestion would be that we decide on a working group or subcommittee or whatever we want to call it, but we have a chair and two vice chairs to support them in the planning.
That's exactly what I was thinking. So who wants to help plan this meeting? A lot of it leans on Fatima and I, who have, who did it. Well, I came into the position and helped with it last year, and then Fatima has done it the year before. So you can lean on us to do a lot of things, but other parts of it we'll need help with. And I can outline that for our next meeting, but if people would like to volunteer to be on the subcommittee, then I can get out information that's way more specific for different tasks.
I have a rookie question, but what can you just give me a headline of what
the Human Rights Day is?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So in the Human Rights document, declaration was passed on December 10th. So then we just picked the Saturday that's closest to December 10th to celebrate that passing of it through the UN. And then what they've done in the past, and I know, Jason, you've probably been to way more. I've only participated last year on very short notice, but you've gone to a couple more.
I've been to two.
Yeah, a couple more. And what they've done in the past, which I think with this new group, we can do whatever we want to do. We've just brought the community together to eat food together, and then we've had an award that for a community individual, and then a community organization. And we wanted to change it a little bit this year, that we have this, our commission, the mayor asked as well, if the commission could nominate a few people, and then we give those names to the mayor and the city council so that they can choose together as a joint award, and kind of talking about what we did last week, having them participate a little bit more, and then invite them here to that event. So it was pretty loose last year, and so with the agenda, that was going to be one of the pieces that we would talk about if you want to participate on the subcommittee. We can have performances by community groups and then have the mayor speak.
I don't believe it's thematic. It's a lot of it's... So we have multiple entertainers. 2 years ago, there was, I believe, Middle Eastern music. There was a Native American dance troupe. And there was some artwork, I believe. Anyway, it's eclectic, but it's about basically what we can do to reach out in our networks and bring people in. So we got the entertainment, the food. At the kind of late along the planning process 2 years ago, the city decided that they were going to pay for it, so we didn't have to do the fundraising. But then it kind of threw us for a loop because it meant then that we put together silent auction things. It was no longer so, but some of us had already had put together packages that had alcohol in it, so that had to get pulled out. And then they,
well, I didn't know about that part. Yeah, who got the alcohol?
Well, because you know, it's a good a bottle of High West is a good thing to put forward in a silent auction package. But yeah, it didn't fly though when the city started paying for it. So that was one thing to be aware of. But yeah, so it's entertainment, food. We already have the location. Then it's about trying to generate community participation, get people to show up.
Yeah, and I think because it's great that the commission is from everywhere and has all different communities that you're connected with. I think so much of the work that we do is pointing out where the gaps are, and we're all weighed down by... at the very least, discrepancies, and then at the most where there's, like, inhumane things happening. So it's more of us just celebrating and bringing people together and saying, okay, now we're celebrating our diverse place, and this is what we bring to the table, and it's something that's happy. Yeah. So whoever wants to participate in the subcommittee, just let me know, and then we'll just have more emails, and I'll... give you more information on kind of the planning process, so we don't have to have it every single time during this meeting. We'll just have a quick update. So if you're willing or have time to, the entertainment, the awards process, and then we can figure out like the food and decor kind of things happening.
Actually, no, Aubrey and I'm going to be out of town for that
day. Oh, man. Okay, perfect.
Okay. I'll help too with money.
Oh, okay, with some too. Thank you.
I'll help out as well. I just don't want to take lead on it.
Can I save me the date you need me so I can organize my schedule too?
Oh, okay, perfect. So I'll be sending some extra emails your way just because you're on the subcommittee, if anybody else can, has capacity to do so. And then we'll, like for the next meeting, we'll talk about nominations so we can just do etch away at this thing. Thank you. That's... And you, yeah.
So what we did both of the last two times was the commissioners made nominations, and we came up with just people that we know, respect, or organizations that we're familiar with that we think might be taken for consideration. And we took about two months or so to get the list together, and then we at one of our meetings we kind of discussed a pitch for each one of them, and we voted as a commission on who we wanted to give the individual award to and who we wanted to give the organization award to. But it sounds like you guys are trying to switch that up a little bit. So
yeah, I think that having a little bit more participation from the council and from the mayor so that they have some investment. Yeah. And I'm just remembering the 2 years ago was Indigenous peoples, and then last year we're celebrating women. Now I remember. And then, so then you can all choose what you'd like to focus on for the Human Rights Day, and then pick the organization that highlights that community. Mm-hmm. That would make it easier too.
That seems, because 2 years ago we gave it to Judge Oda, and then we had given it to the West Side hospice organization, the nonprofit that gives hospice to homeless people.
Yeah,
yes, that's it. I couldn't remember.
That was just on the information that I received from the list. So I don't know how, but last year we picked it was Yolanda and her work with women, and who is the organization? No, I'm Real Women Run.
Yeah, Real Women Run.
Yeah. So. Because they were supporting them. So you can go whatever route you'd all like to choose.
I believe that both of them were selected unanimously by the commission as well. So,
yeah. So if you'd like to, we'll talk about that too, little pieces with what the theme, if you would like a theme. Yeah. Yep.
So we don't end up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
I would suggest we consider, if we look at that list, either the refugee community or immigrant community.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, too.
What was that?
I'd say consider refugees or immigrant community for this next theme.
Sounds like they haven't been considered yet, so that might be a good way to go.
Okay, I'll put that down, and then I'll just double check. Mm-hmm.
Here, I have the list from 2 years ago still in my folder. If you want to see kind of how we put together, I can just pass it around and you can. So it's not like a big formal process. It's just.
And then one idea I had was, in the future, I'm learning how to use the new website, would be just to have that the whole entire year on our website, so then we can open up next year to the public, and then they can say, here, nominate a person who gets an award. We also could add to that, if we wanted an individual, I thought it would be cool too if we had a youth or a young person get an award.
Yeah, that would be excellent.
Who's doing work already, so then that would be three, just to round it out. Mm-hmm. Like a... Yeah, kind of thing. So then we're supporting the next generation in doing the work.
The lawyer community calls that the rising stars.
The rising stars, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rising star in the legal community.
No, anything else on this topic, or should we move on?
Any other requests for this? Okay.
All right, that takes us into agenda item number 4, our status updates. So the census, Luca, update?
That's me as well. Ah. Okay, I just wanted to give a quick update because we talked a little bit about Luca in our last couple of meetings. And the next couple of weeks, we're going to be going out and actually inputting the different addresses. So everybody was here, but just a little bit more context about what Luca does is that the best analogy is you can't get invited to the party if we don't know where you live. So with the census, they can't send the census to a person's house if they don't even know where they live. So Luca is the precursor to gathering all of the addresses and then sending them out. And so what they've done is in these low count areas, what would we learn from the last census in different communities, we're targeting them so that we can get... we can get as many people counted. There's a piece of paper that has, that I gave out, this one, the George Washington University. And this is what, how much money. So that's what's at stake. So for every person that's counted, it's $1,086, which adds up, right? After, if you don't count 10 people, that's like, oh, that's $10,000 right there. So this is just a breakdown on how accurately counting everyone through the census really impacts us in terms of dollars. And so for Salt Lake City, we're trying to still get 40 volunteers. And some of us in the staff are helping as well. But if we aim for 40, then maybe 30 will come.
Moana, do you know if the Benyon Center, because I sent the flyer with the training and everything to the Benyon Center. Do you know whether they got in touch with the county or with any of the, because I've tried to get that word out to try to get some people that might need service hours.
Right.
Okay.
I think it's hard because it is the summer. That's what we're getting pushback from in all of the school educational avenues. But I'll follow up with the Benyon Center so I can, I'll ask them because I wasn't at the last county meeting. I'm going this Thursday.
Okay.
And for Salt Lake City, this is just for Salt Lake City, is the 40. So we can ask as well, because June 16th is when we need the 40 volunteers.
Okay.
And they're the three areas we really need. Poplar Grove needs 8 volunteers. Then we have Glendale Ballpark needs 12 volunteers. And then Rose Park needs 12 volunteers.
So the last committee council meeting, Rose Park Committee Council meeting before the summer break is tomorrow. If you have...
I think Elaine, I'm going to remind Elaine, tomorrow is that meeting?
Yeah, so it's going to be the barbecue in the park. It might be something to make sure that the city's point person brings up or at least get the, I think... Daniel Strong is the chair. If you get a message to him, he might be able to try to recruit some people at the very least from the commission or the committee council or community council members themselves might be interested in participating.
I'm texting her now so I do not forget. Yeah, because when you break it down, it seems a little bit more manageable when we just ask 12 or for 12 volunteers only in Rose Park. And the date would be June 16th in the morning of Saturday morning.
The county did, along with, you know, we had the city and the county got together, it was about 3 weeks ago to kind of kick off the training on how to utilize this. And there's a group... community, I can't remember what they're called, but they're based out of California, and they came and basically trained how to do the canvas. And it's really, it's actually really easy because they have you load up on your phone an app that you can use, and you don't have to knock on doors or anything. You're just walking around and taking a look at a property to see if it looks like it's broken up into maybe 3 or 4 housing units, or if somebody looks like they're living in an RV, or, you know, you're just trying to get an assessment of how many housing units there are in a geographic area. So, again, it was very interesting on how they trained us how to utilize the app. And so it is pretty simple.
Yeah. And if you can get a group together, that's the preference, so that even if you haven't had any training, we can train you on site or gather everybody together and do it on whatever day.
Have we reached out to any of the faith communities to do that?
Z has been reaching out to them, and she tried to go the top-down approach. That fell through.
Okay.
So we're wondering if we should just go and ask them, not top-down. From a grassroots movement. So we're going to ask more people this next week because we have 2 weeks from the 16th.
Yeah.
Or actually only a week and a half.
You've got a week and a half. That's why I'm a little concerned
about
the
crunch time. But that would, people who need to do service projects are like scouting groups. Students at Roland Hall, Judge Memorial.
The only problem with the judge is they're out for the summer.
Our challenge with any school group is you're into that.
All of who would have been easy to
And even scouts, they're doing their courts of honor this week.
Can they bank their community service hours in advance?
Yeah, like juvenile probation.
Nice. I don't think they can.
Some of those kids who need the hours.
Oh, I have... See, your brain works way different. I haven't even thought about that.
What was that?
Kids on juvenile probation needing
the service hours.
Because what you're doing is you have to stay on the public right away. You're not entering anything, and you just have to
look. You just have to walk through.
Yeah, so that might not be a bad one for juvenile probation kids.
Yeah.
Do you have any point of contact?
I'm trying to think if I know anyone anymore in juvenile probation. Nate would have better contacts in juvenile probation than I would at this point.
Okay,
I can reach out to my UJDA friends and see who would be a good contact.
Yeah.
Okay.
If anybody's... And they have to...
Let me email my... I know Pam Vickery, the head of UJDA, and she probably knows of clients of theirs who need community service hours. Mm-hmm. So let me contact her.
And part of that is we have to be done by the end of the month, so we only have the next few weeks anyway. Yeah. They just got the data... 2 weeks ago, and then they're like, okay, you have to have this turnaround and have it back to me by the end of the month. So
those are the tracks that they're giving us, is what you're saying?
Yeah,
that's what
those
they
are
came
the tracks.
With the identified hard to count tracks.
Yeah, okay. Was only Glendale Ballpark, Poplar Grove, and then Rose Park.
Okay,
those are the, because it didn't have any in District 3. Most people are being counted there.
Yeah, well, it's those are West Side districts we need
and
to count.
Part of the And something I learned, too, during that was I didn't realize it doesn't matter if you have 10 families living in one house. The LUCA count is looking if someone lives in the shed separate from the main house.
Yep.
So other folks are in, like, my community. There's 10 families in, like, one house, so they can get all counted in that type of way. Yeah, and that was the update I had about the LUCA count. If there are any other questions. And if you want me to, we're going to send out more information tomorrow with the schedule and the check-in and time when we get it from the county.
Can you send me an email with all that information? Yeah. I will send it over to Pam.
Yeah,
I know. And all of us, because if we think about who might be interested in community groups that we can maybe...
Right.
Because this will be good for last minute hours needed. Because I know those kids are slackers and getting their hours in. At least some of them are. So I know they're always needing last minute ideas for community service.
And they don't necessarily have to have a phone. We would just pair them with someone who has one to do it. So
yeah, that'd be great. Stuff like information like that is great. So that I can get it to
I'll
Pam.
Send that to you tomorrow when I get it from our folks.
Perfect.
We can promote it as it's kind of like Pokemon Go, only
only
you're collecting real people.
The app thing is really fun to use,
and it's really simple. I was thinking we had to do this elaborate thing. You just are like, yes, no, geotag, and then the thing goes, and you have to just stand right in front of it, and then you move to the next location.
Like how many units? Is it?
That's really simple.
I think
that
young
like
people
that.
Would be able to if they. It's not very.
Because what they'll do is, like, they have the address of that house, and then you'll say, trailer in back, and it will really have trailer in back, and then they'll send that census to the trailer in the back.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Cool.
So why these areas mostly is because it most disproportionately impacts immigrant communities, refugee communities, and those low SES. So...
And then I'm glad you brought that up about the community council meetings too, Jason, because we're really trying to find people within. I mean, that was what was recommended, if we can get canvassers from the neighborhoods, because they're going to know where places are at. They're going to know that house that has the extra shed or
has the basement apartment in it.
Apartment and all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So.
And even if we can get a couple of those in each group, that'd be great. Like, I'm going to do the Glendale and Poplar Grove, so I can help with that. But anybody. It's hard. It's been really difficult to find people as well to volunteer because they don't really understand
what this is about.
What it's about, and it doesn't impact you directly. And the other thing is, if you are canvassing, so if anybody's canvassing too, you can do it, except the only thing is you have to stand on when you're using the app. just stand on the public way, yeah, right of way.
Your count, do your Luca count, and then go knock on the door for the yeah. candidate.
If you're doing both, that would be very helpful.
June, who's out canvassing?
Oh, he's already started, and Nate yeah. started.
No, I've seen canvassers out in my neighborhood.
No, I know, that's what I'm saying. It's not in these neighborhoods, but I'm just saying that.
Yeah. Oh.
I've been busy in my hood trying.
I know. I was like, you are actually canvassing.
Yeah, I've seen canvassers already in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on, HB 248. Do you want to take that?
JC Skinner and I are playing phone tag. So that is the status update on that one. So I have no update besides we are working on reaching out to each other to chat about a specific policy or if we can make our own.
Okay.
As to 248.
So the police use of force, group discussion of the reading. Did everybody get a look at the link? Or it wasn't a link, it was a PDF, wasn't it, to the police use of force report? So I actually had my own paper copy of it that I have all my notes on, and it is not in my binder, so it's floating around my car somewhere or in my office. But essentially, if you look at the handout here that we were just given, that sort of the summary outline. So this might give you a better idea what I was envisioning. What we'd like to do is to just take this graph and just continue it. Keep going every 2 years or so that you have an update to it where they update it. You see they have at the top there, these are the three areas of focus: officer training, support, accountability, community engagement. They have a couple of pages that is the, say, 2017 or 2018 update where they address progress that's been made on those areas of focus. They update the last 2 years worth of details on officer-involved shootings, the findings by the DA's office or the results of it, and then a summary at the end of this is what has happened in the last 2 years and this is what we'd like to do moving forward. Seems to me like it was a pretty straightforward idea, just keep this document alive rather than in 5 to 10 years having to bring together all these agencies and people to redo this report again.
I had a question, Jason, because I had read over like briefly before, but I really read into every single word this round. And were you, in terms of the keeping up to date, was it you were just going to have a follow up on those three focus areas? Is that what or do you want to have the entire the community piece? Is what I was wondering.
No, I wasn't expecting to go out there and do the community outreach and the focus groups and all that kind of stuff. My idea was to basically just keep the data flowing.
The data, okay.
Yeah, keep the data updated and be able to have the areas of focus, because they declare that these are what we need to focus on moving forward. And if we've seen what Salt Lake Police Department has done over the last 2 years, they have done a lot of community outreach. They have been focusing on community engagement. They've been trying to emphasize diversity recruitment. They've been trying to
end with the trainings too.
Yeah, de-escalation
because
training.
Because of this document.
Yeah, and the de-escalation training became a major emphasis under Chief Brown. So what I would envisioned was that every 2 years, the police department just adds an addendum to the report that updates the data and says how their idea of how they've addressed the previous goals and then set out goals moving forward for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. That gives us transparency and it gives us the ability to point to the public or groups like CAG to say that it's all there. This is what we're doing. This is what we're trying, what the police department's trying to do, what the city is trying to do, and keep this document alive so that it's, transparent, basically. I thought it was going to be a lot easier than this to get that adopted. But anyway, that's where we're at is, I don't know if I only have 1 month left or if I've got 6 months left. I'd really like to try to get some sit-down meetings with either chief of police and some buy-in from the mayor's office so that we can get this implemented as just ongoing policy to keep this use of force report updated. Mm-hmm.
So I have a question. So I'm thinking about this policy that we just saw on gender equity. Would that, I mean, are you looking, when you mention a policy that kind of enshrines or says this is something we, that is expected with a report to the HRC annually? I mean, are you seeing, I mean, do we, would we make a recommendation for an actual development of a policy, or what do you?
I envision it would probably end up just being something that the mayor adopts. What's the word I'm
looking for? Executive order?
Executive order. It just says that it's expected of Salt Lake Police Department to update this every 2 years.
Okay. So do we make, can we as a commission make a motion or a recommendation that, I mean, yeah. Okay.
That was where we were back in December, but I think we delayed it because we wanted to kind of get buy-in from both the police department and from the mayor's office so that we're all on the same page before we move forward with a recommendation of trying to pressure them. I don't know why it hasn't happened yet. So I'd like to meet with a representative from the police department and maybe Jen or somebody so that we can lay out that this isn't
I'll bring
isn't
it
a trap.
Back up to her too.
Okay.
And I think even making that, now that we've all read it and there's more of you and we're I'm going to bring it back up that everyone, not just Jason, mm-hmm. even
That's
me.
Saying,
yeah. Now that I've read it, I'm like, now I get what Jason's talking about and we need to do this too. So now we have more of us here in the room. We can have that happen and I will be pushing for it as well. I did keep trying to connect and Jen, I will make sure it's on Jen's, our next one-on-one with Jen to make sure she can meet with them. And I can better articulate what you're asking for, Jason.
I mean, the starting point on this for me was that this report took about 18 months and hundreds of work hours to produce. And we don't want to have the city have to repeat that every 5 to 10 years. So to just keep
it's
this
really
document alive.
Too.
Well,
really?
And I guess what I'm saying is maybe what we say is the commission supports Commissioner Wessel's recommendation that,
right.
You know, we accept the report, we appreciate the information that was in it, and we're accepting his recommendation
yes.
that the commission support and continue just, to move forward just, with that.
And yeah.
Keep the data up to date every 2 years is probably fine, and that we just have an addendum every 2 years that fills in the details and
of where we are now.
Where we are now,
yes.
What's happened in the last 2 years, and what we want to do moving forward.
The future, right. Yep.
And that's just
I'm just going to make that motion.
It's a benchmark thing,
yeah,
basically.
That we just support what the request that you're asking of the mayor and the chief to mm-hmm. adopt this as practice.
All right. I appreciate that.
Okay, perfect. And we will be sure to express that as well. Okay, perfect.
Because I agree with you, if there's been that much of an investment to get that data, we need to keep it up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The heavy lifting's been done. Now it's just keeping it up to date.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's very good for transparency issues. I mean, the police department can point to it, and when somebody asks, every time that there is another a police shooting or a confrontation, and then you get the spotlight is focused on the police department again, they can say, we've got this use of force report. You can see these are our numbers. This is you know, what we're doing to address the issues. And
so do anything preemptively, though? I mean, when that report was issued, did that get released? And
that was a point of contention that happened about a year ago.
That was before my time.
Because it bridged two administrations. It kind of started under the previous mayor's office. It took some pressure from this commission to get it made public.
Okay.
And it's now published, and it's on... I think it's on the city's website. It's accessible there, but there was some pushback to making it public.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Oh, there's Jen.
Hi.
We were just talking about you.
Speak of the devil.
So any other questions on... Because I hope I've articulated what my idea is and that it's pretty straightforward, I think.
I don't know who take the lead after
Perhaps it might be something we might want to run by a representative from CAG as well.
For office success.
Were they aware of this reading too, or they've never been?
I have no idea.
I can ask too, because a lot of their recommendations there, when I read the police use of force, was like, oh, these are the same.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that I tried to mention.
So having that bridge too, because I've been attending with Jen those meetings.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have a standing a commitment on Wednesday evenings, so I've never been able to make one of their meetings.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to attend, those are Wednesdays at 5.
Mm. I can't do Wednesdays at 5 either.
Okay. But I'll ask if they've reviewed this policy. I mean, the use of force document.
And ask for recommendations on how it could be improved moving forward. That's getting more community activist buy-in would benefit everybody.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear in the end with the recommendations. It's straightforward. So
it dovetails exactly with what they're suggesting that the city and the police department do. So I think that bringing all parties together and agreeing on the same goals would be benefit all of us. All right. I guess unless anybody has any other questions or concerns on this topic, we've got...
Close the loop. Close the loop.
Agenda item number 5, planned upcoming topics for meetings. We've got school-to-prison pipeline and affordable housing plan.
So they were supposed to be at this meeting, but I couldn't work with their schedule. So Representative Hollins and Angela Doan, because the board meeting falls on the same Tuesday, so that now they're on summer break. So Angela will be able to come. I'm still locking down Representative Hollins. I'm pretty sure she'll be able to attend because she said she'll only be out of town in August. So they can come and talk about the school to prison pipeline. That's
about that, because I looked at the minutes and then
Yeah, I couldn't get them to come this month, but they are working on, Angela's been working on it. She's a senior advisor for education in our office. So I just wanted her to come give that update along with Representative Hollins. And then the affordable housing plan, Lonnie Eggerson-Golf, she's our deputy housing and neighborhood director, so she'll be able to come too. I was just trying to double up on each of our topics so that we can move along. Yeah.
Can I make a suggestion that when we get Lonnie Eggerson-Golf come and speak, that perhaps a rudimentary kind of introductory 101 to the overlapping layers of this, because we've got the RDA, we've got city, we've got county, we've got state, we've got federal. There are so many different overlapping issues on housing plans that it kind of, we can get really deep into the weeds without realizing that we're above our pay grade. Perhaps if we can get just kind of a rundown on the basics of what the not the topic itself, but just the overlapping levels of responsibility on that topic would be very beneficial.
An org chart.
Yeah,
okay.
I think that's what
I was going to say. Do you want like a visual?
I like visuals personally, with little bullet points of what each organization does and where they fall in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I know that just from city council and community council meetings, you end up having them developers come in with their big shiny package plans of, we're going to put in luxury condos, and you're like, but that's not what we need. We need affordable housing. They're like, you can't turn a profit on affordable housing. We want luxury condos and mixed use. And you're like, all right, you're not going to get approval from this group. But just time and time again, that you see the new developments are always starting in the mid 600K range.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Right,
I'll never have a house.
All right. So anything else we want to talk about on the agenda for the next meeting?
Yeah, I think that is plenty.
Yeah, and then I'll just keep those on there and let me know if anybody else wants something. Feel free to email me if there are concerns or other things that you don't remember and you want to put on an agenda, because that's just how I'm putting them together. And then I'm trying to coordinate all the internal folks and their schedules. So that's how, just for transparency reasons. So if you do have specific topics you want to look at, then let me know and then I'll bring that up.
I have one concern. I mean, who I see your email tell you about right now. Mm-hmm. I'm just about the end land port. I know the city being involved with that, and I know there's advantage about that, but there's disadvantage about that too, that project could be funded by the school tax, and that, I'm sorry, like, that money is coming for the kids and then coming for the businessmen. So I suggest, like, if the businessmen who pay for that, the tax coming from the businessmen instead of school, the kids who pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what you guys think about that. You know.
Our purview of it, or our...
In terms of the city with Inland Port? Oh, that's still up for debate today.
Yeah, even today.
I think understanding our purview and our mission in the context of economic development and who gets left out and who gets included is what I think that we have a possibility of a role of at least... Voicing, you know, if everybody's talking at this level right now and how it affects the community
on the ground,
as well as the tax base and our kids,
I think that's probably what's not being said. It's because they're fighting up on this level about, and no one's saying, well, actually, you're all not going to pay for X, Y, and Z, and that's what we want to know. So, do you want a presentation?
State's benefit is on the back of our community and our kids and our kids.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And besides that, the good environment as well. Like, we have problem already with the air.
Yeah.
And
that air quality, too. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how it may be disproportionate that the maybe a minority impact statement or something where it's like you need to understand how certain communities are being impacted by Inland Port discussions that are not even at the table.
I still haven't seen any addressing of how the state and the governor's office, the legislature, is going to get it past organized labor, the states of California and Nevada, because you're talking about some really powerful constituencies that you're interfering with, like the Teamsters Union, the longshoremen. The
interesting that you bring that up, Jason, because the issue that I hear, at least from local unions, is they're on board with the direction that it's going.
Local unions, national unions, no.
Understood, but I'm just saying that as local representatives, they seem pretty comfortable with. In fact, there's a number of legislators that the local unions were not very happy with our no votes. So, but maybe in, you know. The context of who benefits from it, and with our purview being protecting marginalized communities as decisions are being made or as things are being done that impact our city and our constituencies, the overlay that's being missed is who's being missed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just remember that the longshoremen shut down Long Beach and work stoppage in Long Beach and shut down Oakland when they tried to move jobs overseas. So if there's a chance that jobs that fall under the longshoremen end up getting relocated to a right-to-work state, I imagine the national organizations are not going to be happy with it, and you'll see.
So is there a so in terms of that, the actionable item is that having someone come here, or you all wanting to make a statement as a commission, or what does that look like?
I believe, sorry, I don't want to speak for anybody. I believe we'd like to get kind of an update on what the city's position is, because we're getting more information. I'm getting information from, you know, the Tribune and local media, but we know how accurate some of that can be when it's filtered through, you know, 3-4 different people. So just maybe an idea of what the city's position is and strategy moving forward would be beneficial for us, especially with the impact it's going to, the disproportionate impact it's going to have on, you know,
our side of town, Jason.
Rose Park, the west side. I mean, we're going to have an inland port right next to a prison in our backyard, so.
And I think maybe at some point, as we're evaluating what's happening, that we do take a position as a commission saying the communities that are not being, whose voices are not being heard and who may be disproportionately impacted negatively by this whole prospect, they're not going to benefit from the benefits. They're just going to be impacted by the challenges. And we need to make a statement.
Yeah. Right. And even in the community councils, which I attended for the past couple of years, same exact.
Actually, you know who we should have come present to us? There is a working group of individuals from the Northwest Quadrant, the community council folks that are this Inland Port activist group.
Is that Dorothy Owens?
Uh-huh. I'd like to have them come speak to us and help us maybe gel a statement or how we can support efforts to make sure that we're being mindful of the communities that aren't being heard.
Okay.
How do you all feel about that? I'm just kind of...
Sure.
Don't want to,
because they're already, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. If there's a number of advocates that are already working in this regard, we just want to show that we're aware and we're trying to be mindful of the fact of how this affects marginalized communities. So,
and there's something else, I don't know, since we're talking about the voice, we're going to take it about the open internet. Just the senators who voted against it last time, I think. When I saw that the Utah Senate vote to restore it again, which is we are lucky because the Senate passed that bill, but I just felt how our Senate look after the businessmen more than public. I mean, because I think you take in our voice. You know, everybody knows how internet become very powerful for us. How they take our voice. Like, imagine that being taken away from you. I mean, I'm wondering how we can take our voice to the Senate, not only our.
Well, and there's also the other dynamic in our legislature, where Salt Lake is kind of a redheaded stepchild.
Yeah,
we're not taken. Well, I don't think we're taken incredibly seriously, and we tend to be given the short end of the stick.
Yeah,
so that is also that dynamic, and we tend to have produced the Democratic representatives, and they are the minority in the legislature. So,
yeah, this is Senate District 1 in 23 and House District 23.
Yeah, we struggle.
I think if this were up in Bountiful, we'd have a very different outcome.
Right. One last suggestion. I'm sorry.
So, glad you brought that up.
Yeah, in terms of the Living Tradition Festival, was awesome. Was nice. But I think the time is happening during Ramadan. And then I know a lot of people, they couldn't go in there because they're fasting. I said, I'm wondering if you next time be aware about that.
Move it.
Make sure.
Yeah.
That's never even been thought about.
Yeah. And I can talk to...
That's
right.
I want to add a comment on top of that. The school is opening, slated to be opening on Eid Day, August 22nd or 23rd. And the graduation next year for high schoolers is going to be probably on Eid, 4th or 5th June. So we need, I mean, these, I personally feel that fasting and everything, work still goes on. Like, you don't sit home, and yes, there are timings that one has to work through, but Eid is something I shouldn't have to compromise if I need to go to school graduation or if I should be going to the mosque.
Right.
So is the school schedule determined on a state level or on the local school board level?
I just
think it's a district.
Yeah, like
I'm not sure about it.
We start.
I mean, students will take a day off. It is allowed. Mm-hmm. But I think just putting a community through this.
But the first day of school, that's right. Not something you want to miss, especially if you're little.
Exactly.
If you're a small child, the first day of school is kind of a deal.
These 2 dates. And I think a lot of it would be helpful if we can adopt a multicultural calendar.
That's right,
multi-faith calendar.
Yes.
If that could be something, I have been talking to the Golden Rule Project to if they could take this up and provide, you know, major facilities in the city, like an online calendar which lists. Because I mean, being from that community, we've faced that over and over again at different junctures. But now it's with Ramadan being coming into the school year, I think it.
I know that members of the Jewish faith often we run into challenges there in terms of the high holy days and things being scheduled.
I hope
we should, if anything, we as the commission should be aware of when we do things.
Right.
And I have to take that suggestion to the government sector too for people who work in there and the employee. Yeah. I think maybe they can day off or something. You know, they can celebrate with their family during this day too.
So specifically for the Living Traditions Festival, I know that gets scheduled like a year in advance. So that would be something to probably bring up with
now.
It's
the Arts Council that has it. And part of the reason why it's on the same time at this every year is because they're grandfathered into this location.
Mm-hmm.
If you notice, there's only 4 events. You have Pride, Living Tradition, and again the Arts Festival. Yeah.
Well, then if it's impossible to move the schedule, since you know,
there should be some type of
Ramadan is a floating period because of the lunar calendar. Perhaps work something into the Living Traditions Festival that's an after dark acknowledgement.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I know.
Mention of the hours or a something that's specifically designed to accommodate
all different
Muslim community.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, there's also a tradition that I've seen in the bigger cities of the mayors hosting an iftar or a governor, you know, saying a welcome Ramadan message. I know that it's being done for other communities in different celebrations and everything. I do want to put out a recommendation saying I would love to help out create an iftar or some kind of event next year to do this, or even a message on the occasion of start of Ramadan mayor's office.
Let's do that. Now that you're in too, and we're looking at a whole year ahead,
I was going to say,
that gives
do that
us
multicultural calendar, because I know there's other faith traditions that have similar types
so
of
many
things.
Things.
Then we can be representative,
right.
Yeah, I'm sure certain once you have a plan together, if you brought it to the mayor's attention, she'd be more than willing to move forward with something like that.
Yeah, I think she absolutely would.
Mm-hmm.
And going last, I promise it's last. I just want to express my emotion regarding the Supreme Court decision about the cake shop case, and that how was hurtful for First Amendment for people. Mm-hmm. I should like that shop cake shop would be for everybody. It doesn't matter where they come from, what their religion, what they believe. That can bring up stuff in the future, you know, like maybe it can happen again here in Salt Lake because they saw that window is open now.
Right.
The Supreme Court with them is like, okay, I can't do the same thing then since the Supreme Court on my side right now.
So I can provide a little bit of insight to that. I haven't read the full opinion, and those Supreme Court opinions tend to be 100 pages long, so I haven't had time to read it. But in discussing it with members in my community, it was a bad case to bring to the Supreme Court to begin with. The facts were not great. The incident took place prior to Obergefell, so there was no nationwide legalization of gay marriage yet. Mm-hmm. The record was very muddy as to how the couple was denied that service specifically. So what the justices did is it was a tough case. To me, it sounded more like an administrative review of here's what you did wrong, commission. This is what you should do next time. But it didn't really touch on any of the core rights, the core civil rights. So all of those are still intact, and it left open the question for the future. So it's far from decided. It's far from over. They could have done a lot worse, really, but I think they did a good job of protecting the core civil rights of really any protected class. So it's not a blanket. You can discriminate against gays, everyone. It was very much not that. It was a very narrow decision based on really crappy facts, in my opinion. Once I read some of the backstory, I went, yeah, that was not the best case. And I'm kind of...
The challenge is that how it's going to be interpreted by the public at large and right. by businesses who
right.
make assumptions about what it said and what it
but
did.
But see, and that's helpful too, because now we do have Obergefell.
Oh, yeah.
We now have this case. So now we will get some good facts and to bring more cases
it's
to the Supreme Court.
It's going to take somebody doing something wrong again. That,
right.
that's gonna
it will. It'll happen. Yeah. But this next time we will have a good set of facts to work with. So it is very, very far from over. I think Sotomayor and RBG did a really good job of keeping that open and the dissent of we need to really make sure that this doesn't happen again. But it was not a great case to do a slam dunk. No, you got to make a wedding cake for everybody. And I went back and forth on it myself because I thought, what if I was a cake shop owner and a member of the KKK came to me saying, I want this cake decorated and I want it to depict a lynching. Can I say, oh, no, absolutely not. That is absolutely disgusting to me. If the Supreme Court had said, no, absolutely, you have to do anything that someone comes in with, I would have to produce that cake, even though it's absolutely repulsive to me. So I go back and forth on that one quite a bit and what constitutes a public service like a hotel, a gas station, a restaurant versus a private service like photography or legal services. So it's a tough one for me. We need better facts and a better case. So it on the surface it was very hurtful, but it is very far from over.
I have a question about your example about KKK. So let's say that KKK went to the cake shop and said, "I want a cake." Is that mm-hmm. based on what kind of cake they asked for, right?
Right. So if they're having a special like
in the cake, the racism thing, so we're looking at the cake or just normal cake.
Right. Well, but if it's a cake for their celebration of what, the anniversary of the KKK being founded or whatever, or some special day, you know, Forrest's birthday, you know, something. It's some special celebratory cake, and they're asking for a 3-tier cake, and part of it involves a depiction of a lynching. What do you do? It's considered free speech, but at the same time, I mean, it's protected speech. That is actually protected speech, but. As me, as a cake decorator, am I considered to be a public service, or am I a private service? And do I have the ability to refuse to depict that message and to convey that free speech, or can I deny it? And that's part of the issue there is that is a closely held belief for me that is absolutely wrong, but it's still free speech, and it's a tough, tough decision. It is very complicated. Free speech is one of those tough ones, and there's a lot that depends on, like in the civil rights era when a bunch of those Supreme Court decisions were coming down about denial of people of color at restaurants and hotels, the court did decide that those are public services. So it doesn't matter what your beliefs are, you have to serve these people if you're a hotel, if you're a gas station, if you're a restaurant. You cannot deny based solely on the color of someone's skin, based on any protected class. And now gays are considered to be a protective class with Obergefell. So there is a lot of testing that needs to be done because there's a lot of squiffiness when a lot of those cases came down when race was considered a protected class. Suddenly people are saying, well, you can't. It's my belief that you're an inferior race, and so I'm not going to serve you in my restaurant. And so that's when those cases came out of saying, nope, you're a public service, you need to serve them. I don't care what you say, what you think. You cannot deny someone a service based on this protected class. But this was a really bad case because gays weren't protected at the time that the cake decorating was denied. So that's the hard part.
I think ACLU is putting out very precise information about this mm-hmm. in a very nuanced way. I think we should all make an effort to understand how this legal sort of nuance was played out. Because mm-hmm. I agree with you, there's a lot of hysteria around it.
Mm-hmm.
But the
a lot of misunderstandings, too.
Exactly, yeah. But there is a second layer, and we need to take the time to understand mm-hmm. and not just go by headlines only.
Right. Yeah.
I think there's a tendency to do that. It's not my personal opinion, though.
Right, yeah, and it's they have to look at it from a very much 30,000-foot view and into the far future so that, you know, if you're any religion, if you're Muslim, do you have to put hateful messages on a cake that you disagree with that are anti-Muslim? Like, that's what they have to look at far down the road. It's not just one gay couple looking for a wedding cake. It's really everybody. What do you do with all these religions? And just because it's a class that I'm in favor of doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to be that's going to be good policy in the future.
What I do agree with is what you said, that the signals that this kind of stuff is sending out to the public, that is more dangerous because there's so much...
They'll misinterpret it to their own devices.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all these racial attacks and other things have gone to an unprecedented level in the history of this country at the moment. So this kind of conversation without putting out proper, you know, I guess, way to relay it, it gets people riled up.
It does. I think the ACLU has done a really good job of saying, okay, it's not all bad. Mm-hmm. They've been sending out stuff of, okay, civil rights is still protected.
Right.
This case still protected that because it really was. The justices from the excerpts I read did a good job of saying this is very narrow. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a warning of, we don't mean to say that you can just do whatever you want. Now, guys, this is a very narrow decision.
Okay. Does anybody have anything else on open dialogue?
I just wanted to thank Moana and everybody for helping us go through the process of getting...
And welcome. I forgot.
I just want to say the council was very, very generous the way they interviewed and welcomed us.
They're really good, yeah. I
really appreciate that.
Okay, so...
We're almost there.
All right.
We're almost there.
So close.
I would like to... two things... positive that we're getting national recognition in Salt Lake City for having one of the largest and most successful pride celebrations.
Yay.
Yeah.
Something to be proud of.
And
I couldn't bring myself to.
And next year, I promise I will notify everybody and you can all be in the parade. I'm sorry. I was in New Orleans and then I had to rush back and I was like, I forgot to send that email to invite everyone. But yes.
So and we'll just know next year. Yeah,
next year, you're going to be in the parade. Just be in the parade.
Show up. Right.
But you have to come at 9, so you can't sleep in on that Sunday.
And it's probably going to be on Eid.
It will be an Eid.
Yeah. Then my,
just putting it out there.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah. my second one that's not positive, the separation of children from their parents at the border is... using the word intersectional, is intersecting with a lot of, raising a lot of red flags on that. It seems to be an effort to intimidate, terrorize, and to prop up the private prison industry. It's just, it's basically hitting on all cylinders of just horrible, terrible things that... that I'm not sure what there is that you know, we as a country can do about this, but it's definitely not something that makes me feel proud of the direction we're heading in.
Yeah.
On the agenda, there's Immigrant Heritage Month celebration. What is that?
So at the end of the month, I'll send you information. This month is actually both Pride and Immigrant Heritage Month, and we're having a celebration. It's only been around for 4 years, I think. There's a national campaign to make it more visible, and they're coming here. They're going to 4 other cities, and Salt Lake City is hosting one of them, and we're going to have a... I'll send the date. It's June 23rd. Sorry, we're still figuring all those things out. And it's just going to be...
I know.
Are you out of town as well?
I was getting married that day. I'm not going to be in
So it's an installation that's going to be put up, and then we're going to just... People who come from immigrant backgrounds are just going to write, I love where I came from and your story. I think you've seen those shirts. They're pretty popular. I am an immigrant. Yeah. That's from that campaign.
Oh.
So they're coming here at the end of the month.
Nice.
And we just wanted to invite everybody here, and if you want to get the word out, I'll be sending information.
Yeah.
I'll send you all the press release and those things. I just wanted to remind myself to ask you.
I hope it's the 30th.
No.
It's not.
And that's the day we're celebrating our anniversary.
Double checking, making Sure. Oh, all right. So
it's a good day then.
It is a
There's
good
a lot
day.
Of.
Happy. Unless anybody has anything else, I can entertain a motion to adjourn until next month.
Did we decide if we have a quorum for next month? I know I'll be out of town. It's the week of 4th of July.
Yes.
We talked about that last.
We did talk about that. Will there be, who will be able to attend next?
Last month, we decided we would have a quorum with the new members if they could make it. Is that still valid?
Because it's July 3rd, just to let you know.
Okay. I think so. I need to double check on my camping trip.
July 3rd, yeah, because I know that. Some folks will be out because the 4th is the next day.
Can I suggest that we meet? And if we don't have a quorum, it's just an informal meeting where we can't make any substantive motions.
I cannot.
Kim cannot.
You don't know yet.
Oh, yeah.
I'm an unknown too. I might be coming back from Capitol Reef that morning, so we'll see.
Boy, that only leaves you and me, Jason.
So maybe we'll you guys could go for coffee.
We can talk about the Human Rights Day, though, if you're the subcommittee, so we'll still make it useful. Perfect. And
at the very least, we can have a placeholder.
Thank you all.
So now we'll entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting until July 3rd.
Second.
All right. All in favor of adjourning?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? No? All right. We're adjourned.